And here I go again on my own, going down the only road I've ever known. Like a drifter, I was born to walk alone. And I made up my mind, I ain't wasting no more time, but here I go again.
You are my density, you are my density.
Okay, so very briefly on the Bivol versus Beterbiev fight. The rematch was last night. And yes, my man Dmitry Bivol put on another masterclass. And this time he won. He won the first one, I thought. But he won this one clearly. I mean, the guy is just, it's just art to watch him box. If you can check that out somewhere, please watch the first fight. Watch the second fight. Even if you don't like boxing, this will change your mind. Or at least it's just beautiful to watch. Okay, moving on. So I had mentioned starting to notice signs lately, like stop signs. I just figured out what they meant. I never knew, but just kidding. Weird, coincidences or whatever, like the previously mentioned rainbow I recently saw. So I was a little anxious the other day. I was waiting for the final written offer for this Los Angeles job. I went into the morning to Whole Foods, walked in, and I was like, wait a minute. Is that Eric Clapton's Bell Bottom Blues playing on the sound system? And it was. And I was like, okay, I goddamn love this song. I've never heard it in any kind of store before. So, okay, that's a sign. Things will work out. And literally, I'm not bullshitting you, later in the afternoon, I got the written offer in an email. So, at least right now, somebody up there likes me. And Somebody Up There Likes Me is a 1956 movie directed by the big-time Robert Wise, starring Paul Newman, based on the fighter Rocky Graziano. The film also starred the interesting, kind of tragic actress Pierre Angeli. She was in a relationship with another absolute legend, James Dean. I guess he proposed to her, she accepted, but then she said no. And they reportedly never spoke again. We all know the tragic death of James Dean, but Pierre Angeli later married the singer Vic Damone. Pierre Angeli suffered from anxiety and depression, and she eventually died in 1971 in Beverly Hills from a barbiturate overdose. But back to Bell Bottom Blues. Christ, I can't remember if I played it on this podcast before, but here's a little. It was also featured in that movie The Box, which I recommended before. Please watch that goddamn thing. Bell Bottom Blues, you make me cry. I don't want to lose this feeling. And if I could choose a place to die, it would be in your arms. Do you want to see me crawl across the floor to you? Do you want to see me beg you to take you back? I'd gladly do it, 'cause I don't want to fade away. Give me one more day, please. I don't want to fade away. In your heart I long to stay. And I don't know, does that happen to you? Do you see things that are just so coincidental that you're like, man, is there some grand scheme here and the entity in control is just kind of giving me a little push saying, you're good, man, you're on the right track? Or even when things are going badly for me, or if I'm depressed or just kind of hopeless, I will sometimes hear something or see something and be like, okay, you're feeling down right now, but hey, you fucker, here's a song you love. So keep going. You know things will brighten up. I was feeling super lousy several years ago in Los Angeles, and I went down to my beloved little grocery store in Santa Monica off of Broadway, and I walk in, and there's this random old song playing again that I totally love, and it always lifts my mood. It was Opus 17, Don't You Worry About Me, by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Go listen to that goddamn thing. And little known fact, it was actually originally Frankie Valli and the Five Seasons. But one of the members died of tuberculosis, so it became Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. And that actually is a lie, and to be frank, kind of a lousy joke, so I apologize. Or as Malcolm McDowell playing Alex in Stanley Kubrick's 1971 A Clockwork Orange would say, "Happy polylogies." And I didn't read a ton of books in my youth. I bought a bunch, but I didn't really read many. I think I read that Jim Morrison thing, No One Gets Out of Here Alive, whatever the fuck it was called. Anyway, I did read Anthony Burgess's 1962 dystopian novel, A Clockwork Orange, which the movie was based on. And the lead character speaks in kind of an invented slang language, which is called Nadsat, which is actually the Russian word for teen. One of my favorite quotes in this Nadsat language that Alex says is, "Come and get one in the yarbles. If you have any yarbles, you eunuch jelly thou." I guess yarbles means nuts. And you know, I like the movie A Clockwork Orange. It's one I only had to see one time. But even as a kid, the one thing I always was fixated on was the bar that Alex and his buddies would hang out at. It was the Korova Milk Bar, which was a bar that served like doped milk, like milk with different drugs in it. And I was just, man, that sounds great. I've always loved milk, but doped milk? I mean, count me in. I remember the first time I drank a beer, I like took a sip, I was maybe 12 or something. And I was just like, ugh, this tastes like shit. And kind of in my kid head, I thought beer would maybe taste like root beer or something like that. And though I did used to drink beer in my high school days and a little bit after that, during college, you know, I never really liked the taste of beer, even now. And in pharmaceutical news, I guess the FDA approved a new non-addictive pain medication. It kind of works like kind of outside of the brain, so it doesn't make you kind of euphoric or high. And to that I say, well, what kind of fun is that? No, I mean, I get it. Opioids are so damn addictive and destructive. I mean, they are wondrous if used appropriately, but like all those things that are so chemically pleasurable, it's so easy to get hooked. And yes, we're all addicted to something. Healthy addictions, unhealthy addictions, and we just hope that the good addictions eventually prevail. As David Lynch said, "I wish what every addict wishes for, that what we love is good for us." Unfortunately for David Lynch, he loved cigarettes just a little bit too much. I read an article recently that mentioned Chevy Chase and Johnny Carson. I guess in some interviews, Chevy Chase kind of mildly insulted the late-night talk show hosts like Johnny Carson. Unfortunately, Chevy Chase eventually gave his own talk show, The Chevy Chase Show, which ran for one season in 1993. Chevy Chase was unfunny, arrogant, and it was just a complete uncomfortable misfire from the get-go. And you know, there's usually things that are critically panned or deemed as bad, but there's usually a cult of people that enjoy the show or movie. You know, I always kind of liked the movie Hudson Hawk, to be honest, and I kind of liked Howard the Duck. But The Chevy Chase Show was straight up terrible, like full stop, almost excruciating to watch. And why am I bringing this all up? Because I just read a spot on, lightly lacerating and just perfect quote from Johnny Carson when he commented on Chevy Chase's attempt as a talk show host. He said about Chevy Chase, "He couldn't ad-lib a fart after a baked bean dinner." I mean, how well done is that? Crude, but erudite, clever as shit, completely pro. Oh, and I noticed someone has been listening in Paris recently. Ah, Paris, ah, the city of light, vieille lumière. So-called, supposedly, because it was the first European city to use gaslight streets. I mean, what a city. I only went to Paris once, but man, all the architecture, the coffee, Jean Seberg's grave. I mean, give me Jean-Paul Belmondo reading a newspaper and smoking a Galois over fucking Timothy Chalamet or whatever the hell. And maybe my listener in Paris is an American in Paris, which was a great 1951 film directed by Vincente Minnelli. Yes, the father of Liza Minnelli. And yes, there is a new documentary on Liza I will check out. It's called Liza, a truly terrific, absolutely true story. And Liza is one of the members of the EGOT Club, meaning she won an Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. I think there's like currently 19 people who are in this exclusive club. But back to an American in Paris, it stars the legendary Gene Kelly, along with Leslie Caron. Gene Kelly plays an ex-GI who stays in post-war Paris to become a painter. It's a musical comedy which features the song, "I Got Rhythm." And if nothing else, I have always had good rhythm. My dad liked to play drums, and I've just always been good at keeping time and rhythm. I also have some decent moves for a 6'3" white guy, but I'm pretty tall. So like whenever I've actually seen videos of me dancing, I kind of look like a giraffe at a party. Anyway, the idea of someone in Paris listening to my dumbass podcast and my voice blows me away. So merci to whoever you are. And quickly on France and Gene Kelly again, one of my favorite composers ever was Michel Legrand. God, man, just the greatest, catchiest melodies, beautiful stuff, swinging stuff. He has a ton of songs. He did The Windmills of Your Mind from the original The Thomas Crown Affair from 1968, directed by another biggie, Norman Jewison, with Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway about a bored rich playboy who decides to rob a bank. It's a must-see. There was a decent remake of The Thomas Crown Affair in 1999, directed by Mr. Die Hard himself, John McTiernan, starring Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo. It's a solid remake. Well done. And more on Pierce Brosnan in a moment. But my favorite Michel Legrand music is from the two powerhouse musical romance movies by the stellar director Jacques Demy. 1964's The Umbrellas of Cherbourg and 1967's The Young Girls of Rochefort. Catherine Deneuve is in both films, and Gene Kelly has a role in The Young Girls of Rochefort. Just to get a taste of this absolutely magical music, take a listen to Devant le Garage from The Umbrellas of Cherbourg. But for an absolute jazzy, infectious song, check out Chanson des Jumelles. Sorry if I fucked it up. From The Young Girls of Rochefort. I mean, if it doesn't get you absolutely snapping your fingers and dancing around your living room, then something is wrong with you. I mean, I have a studio apartment, not really a living room, but trust me, I get my dancing done, often standing in the kitchen and just grooving. And briefly, back to Jacques Demy, the director. He was married to the diminutive, just force of nature, and artist and director herself, Agnes Varda. Good God, what an interesting, curious, independent, badass of a woman. One of her early famous films was Cleo from 5 to 7 from 1962, which follows a pop singer who has 2 hours to wait, thus 5 to 7, until the results of her biopsy come back. I mean, what a great idea for a movie. What a hook. She also did 1985's Vagabond, which I saw when I was like way too young, and it was way too much of a downer for me. Agnes Varda also did documentaries. I really enjoyed 2000's The Gleaners and I. It's really a beautiful little movie. Agnes Varda and Jacques Demy loved each other. I mean, he was famously bisexual, but their relationship worked. So, man, whatever makes people happy, I'm all for. He died in 1990, originally reported as from cancer at the age of 59. But Agnes later revealed he actually had died of AIDS. Agnes Varda was prolific, curious, and just a one-of-a-kind woman. And she died in 2019 at age 90. Rest in peace, both of you. She's buried at the Montparnasse Cemetery along with her husband, Jacques Demy. And also buried there is the previously mentioned Jean Seberg. So I've kind of been thinking a lot about my upcoming move. I haven't watched a ton of movies, but back to Pierce Brosnan, I watched a ridiculous 1988 action movie called Taffin, T-A-F-F-I-N, that's his name, where Brosnan plays a kind of charismatic badass, kind of debt collector, kind of fixer. He's tough. I guess he knows some goofy martial arts and stuff. And there's an evil corporation trying to build a chemical plant in the small Irish town he lives in. It's stupid, enjoyable, likable. Nothing great, but Brosnan is cool in it. And there's just one silly-ass sex scene in it where Brosnan, like, rips off the shirt of his girlfriend. And then they, like, start embracing, kissing. And they totally, like, awkwardly, like, shift their bodies down to the floor to have sex. And there's this, like, huge, big, perfectly nice bed right there besides them. And it's like, there was not a lot of room on the floor. So I was like, it's an odd choice, but hey, go with what works. I mean, I kind of do understand the floor motive though. You can kind of get better traction on the floor, as I have always said. And no one ever knows what I'm talking about. Okay, another made up Jack Nicholson quote. This one isn't particularly clever, but it's just so Jack. And Jack Nicholson recently appeared in the audience at the Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary show to introduce Adam Sandler. Jack has reportedly been holed up in his house for years. He stopped acting a while back, but, you know, he looked all right. I mean, he's old, but you still see that devilish charisma in his eyes. Anyway, so let's see. Jack Nicholson is shaking hands with a businessman. They are making an arrangement. And Jack says, "Well, okay, it's a deal. As long as you realize the fact that I'm always going to be 3 steps ahead of you." And hey, why not? Let's bring a Stacy Keach style quote in here. So in this scene, there's a few hoodlums messing around with Stacy Keach. The biggest, toughest looking guy comes at Stacy, and Stacy summarily beats the shit out of him. The guy is momentarily knocked out. His friends pick up the guy, and then the guy slowly comes to and he yells, What happened? Where is he? Let me at him. And Stacy Keach calmly says, look, guys, I'll gladly kick his ass again if you want me to. Otherwise, get the fuck out of here. And this isn't really a quote. It's just something that popped into my head and kind of made me laugh that maybe no one has ever said before, or certainly no one has said recently. All right, all right. Who do you think you are? Conway Twitty or something? Conway Twitty was a kind of a rockabilly turned country music singer. Died pretty young at the age of 59 of an aortic aneurysm. Rest in peace, Conway. So let's close the book on this episode. Again, I'm finishing it close to the wire, but hey, I've had a lot on my mind lately. But it will all work out. I just have to, most importantly, start looking for an apartment in Los Angeles. You know, a place where I can keep my stuff. And of course, whenever we talk about our stuff, we must go back to the king of comedy himself, George Carlin, with one of his great bits about people's stuff. As he said, that's the whole meaning of life, isn't it? Trying to find a place for your stuff. Your house is just a place for your stuff. If you didn't have so much goddamn stuff, you wouldn't need a house. You could just walk around all the time. That's all your house is. It's a place to keep your stuff while you get more stuff. Well said, Mr. Carlin. And I do keep things pretty minimalist these days. I mean, sometimes I'll just take a good look at my stuff and just shit can a bunch of things. It's like, dude, you never ever wear those shirts. You're never going to read some of those books. Just fucking throw it out. It's like you are never going to actually wear those assless chaps, okay? Well, I mean, I guess maybe hold on to those. You never know. Anyway, until next week, sayonara, starring Marlon Brando.